Dr. Grossman is a research scientist at Wellesley Centers for Women at Wellesley College here in Massachusetts. Her work focuses on adolescent sexual health and risk-taking, prevention of risk behavior, and family processes that support healthy adolescent development. She co-directs the evaluation of Get Real, which is Planned Parenthood's comprehensive middle school sex ed program on which this presentation is based. She's also the PI of two NICHD-supported studies on the role of family communication in teen sexual health.
Hey, I'm Jenny Grossman, and great panel, and I think we kind of bring different pieces. So following up on Leah's talk, I'm going to fill in a little bit more from the parent side of things. Just a disclosure, so I work for Wellesley Centers for Women, and we've been contracted by Planned Parenthood to conduct an evaluation of Get Real, their middle school comprehensive sex education program. Okay, so I'm just going to give a little bit of background on the literature out there. We know, and many of you may know as well, that there's a lot of negative health and educational effects of having sex at an early age. We also know from research out there that when parents talk with their kids about sex, it can actually reduce adolescent sexual risk-taking behavior. However, some studies suggest that less than half of teens report that their parents talked to them about sex and birth control. And as Kathleen had already mentioned, parents often, they don't have the knowledge, they don't have the skills, they don't have the confidence to talk about these issues. These are really hard things to talk about, hard for teens' perspectives, hard for parents' perspectives. So I think families need all the help they can get to support these really critical conversations. So from this, we see that there's a problem, right? Negative health effects when teens have sex at an early age, that family conversations can make a difference, and that there's an opportunity here to really provide some resources to families to support these conversations. Okay, so one resource out there is through sex education programs. There are a lot of programs out there that do have family components. And in general, school-based sex education programs have been the most effective in this area just because of their proximity to teens and their connection with parents. However, there aren't a lot of evaluations out there of school-based sex education programs, particularly around a family component. It's Your Game, Keep It Real is one of the few that has a strong family component and that has been shown to be effective in delaying sex and in reducing risky sexual behavior. They have this family component, but they haven't evaluated it separately from the overall effect of the evaluation. Building Futures for Youth is another recent evaluation that actually didn't show any findings for behavioral impact. And the evaluators wanted to assess the family component, but there was such poor attendance at the family workshops that they weren't even able to assess it. So you start to get a sense of what are the complexities of assessing the effect of this, of the parent aspect of sex education programs. So the context is that we did this overall evaluation, but I really want to focus on the family component in this talk. So I'm going to kind of try to breeze through the rest of it and focus in on describing the family component and then talk about the family aspect of the evaluation. So the program we evaluated is called Get Real. It's a comprehensive sex education program with 9 lessons per year in 6th, 7th, and 8th, so 27 lessons total, that brings factually accurate, age-appropriate, and culturally sensitive information. And it identifies, which is important for this piece, parents and other trusted caregivers as the primary sex educators of their own children. So it's really trying to bring that shared work back home to the families. Okay. So in terms of the family component, those family activities, which is basically one for every lesson that happened in class, there was a lesson, an assignment that went home. They were intended to support family communication about beliefs and values, and they included a lot of resources to parents, which we know is critical. So just letting parents know what was going on in class, defining terminology, giving tips and resources. And students were asked for each assignment to bring a sheet back that was signed by a parent or guardian to show that they did the assignment. Is it an ideal way of assessing this? No, but it's what we had. So just a couple of examples of lessons. One was watch a TV show together with your parent and talk about healthy and unhealthy relationships in that parent. And actually from some qualitative work we did, we know that kids really like that. That was one of their favorite ones. Another was doing role plays, switching roles of parent and teen. Okay, so again, I'm going to quickly go over the evaluation design, but focus in on the family piece here. So we had 24 schools that were randomly assigned to treatment and comparison groups. They're mainly urban schools in the Boston area. Students were followed from 6th to 8th grade, and the surveys looked at knowledge, attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors. Treatment schools had Planned Parenthood educators teaching this program, Get Real, to a cohort of students in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. Comparison schools, as with many programs, had sex education as usual, whatever was taught in their school, ranging from nothing to a lot. Now, I said we had a randomized control design, and as those of you who've tried to do these in real life notice, they don't always work out as planned. So we had 24 schools. If you think about you're trying to create some kind of soccer team or something, and you pick out of a hat 24 kids, and you want to have equal random 12 kids on each side, usually one team's going to end up better than the other. 24 isn't a lot when you're looking at a school level. So our randomization, not as perfect as we would have liked. So I'm going to talk a little bit about differences in baseline between our treatment and comparison groups and how we address them. Okay, so just looking at the means here, you see our comparison group was older. They had a lower median household income. I'm not going to talk about all of these, but I'm going to kind of highlight some of the big ones. They were more likely to be Black and Asian, less likely to be white, and they were less likely to live in a two-parent household. Surprisingly, given all these differences, they actually didn't have significant differences in having sex at baseline, although a limitation of our study is that we were only able to measure vaginal sex, so we're not talking about other kinds of sex. Talks about the limitations of school-based surveys and what we were allowed to ask. And we do control for all of these differences in our analyses to try to equalize those samples a little bit more. Okay. So we did logistic regressions for our analyses that control that were clustered by school. We used a multi-group model because we wanted to be able to look at differences both across and within groups. So the across would be looking at what is the impact. Does this program make a difference in terms of teen sexual behavior? And within, looking at what is the role of family activities? Does it actually make a difference? We did separate analyses for girls and boys. Prior evaluations, some programs work for girls, some programs work for boys, some both. Also just sexual norms and behaviors. And also in our study, there were different baseline rates of sex for boys and girls. Okay. So I'm going to jump really fast through the overall evaluation outcomes. I know they're interesting, but I really want to focus in on the family piece. So basically, it looked like the evaluation, the program worked, which is really, which was exciting. So students who got the Get Real program were less likely to have vaginal sex by eighth grade than similar students in the comparison group. And we were looking at 16% fewer boys and 15% fewer girls had had sex by the end of eighth grade compared to boys and girls who had that sex education as usual in their schools. Okay. But so coming into the real question that we had for this study, which is looking at what was the contribution of the family activities. I'm just going to go through a couple of these to focus on. So these are the variables that we included in the analyses. You can see these covariates, the things that we saw differences in between comparison and treatment groups. We wanted to make sure we accounted for those. Completion of family activities, the way we measured that is that the Planned Parenthood educator in each class, they recorded for every kid in that class over the 3 years how many assignments did they bring home that had a signature, did they bring back to school that had a signature. So there were 24 possible. The average that we found was between 6 and 7, so it's between a quarter and a third of assignments that were completed over the course of 3 years. So, you know, kids don't always do their homework, right? And these weren't assignments that were graded, so there's not a lot of incentive. So kids did some, but not that much. We also included grades and parent closeness in the analysis. We wanted to see that the findings weren't just about kids who are compliant and kids who generally do well in school, but also we wanted to know not just whether kids who are close to their parents are less likely to have sex, but also above and beyond. What about what role does talking about sex above and beyond closeness play? Okay. So what we found was a significant effect. It's not a big effect, but it is an effect. for boys, only for boys. We found a trend in the same direction for girls, but we only saw this finding for boys. And it was for sixth grade, just for sixth grade lessons. So boys who did the family activities in sixth grade were more likely to delay sex than those who didn't. Again, that effect was not there for girls. So some of the take-homes for us is that these families may be particularly important for boys. It doesn't negate the importance for girls, but we were interested in why is this there for boys and not for girls. One piece that we wondered about is that whether these activities encourage parents and their sons to talk about sexual issues earlier than they might have otherwise. We know from prior research that it's important for parents to talk to teens before they have sex in order to have the most effect on risky sexual behavior. So it may be that parents were waiting a little bit longer to talk to boys and that these lessons just provided a context and instigated that conversation a little bit earlier. We also know that from prior research that parents often talk more with their daughters than their sons. So it may be that this extra push encouraged parents to have those conversations with their son. Okay, so one of the things that this means for us in terms of family role in sex education, it suggests that it actually matters, that these programs can be successful in engaging families, and that there's a possibility that these family activities help to engage families who might not have been talking about sex and relationships. If you think back to those numbers that teens are saying, that half of teens are saying that their parents don't talk to them about sex and relationships or sex and birth control, and that maybe some of these families would be engaged by these assignments where they wouldn't otherwise be having those conversations. Also, encouraging early communication about sex and providing those resources for parents. We've heard from many of the panelists that parents, even in conservative areas, really support sex education and want to have access to these resources, but there's such a level of discomfort, and often parents didn't have sex education themselves. They don't necessarily have the information, the resources. So this is one way to get those resources out to families. In terms of thinking about future research, so this is one indicator that suggests that this can be effective, that family communication in the context of a sex education program can actually make a difference in teen sex. But what we don't know is sort of what about it works. If you think about trying to replicate or trying to do a program that actually makes a difference, is it just getting something out to families? Is it just and saying initiate a conversation, and once they have a conversation, that's all that really matters. It doesn't really matter how you talk about it or what you talk about it. Or is it something specific about what they talk about or how they talk about it? We know from general family communication research that there's some ties between parents who talk about disapproving of sex can be linked to delaying sex for teens. So do you have to say, don't have sex, or I really think it's a bad idea, or is it more about just engaging in that conversation? And it would be really great to learn a little bit more about that. And one plug that I'm going to make sort of beyond this study, because extended family relationships are an important piece of my own work, I think it's great to get this research out there on nuclear family contexts, but I also think that there's a real opportunity, particularly in minority families, to get out there and really learn that it's not always that dyad of particularly mom-teen that we understand most about, and that a lot of teens are really relying in critical ways on these resources of extended families who aren't necessarily included as a resource, and we don't necessarily know that we can reach out to these people as critical supports for teen development. Thank you.